This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. The Little Lame Prince by Miss Mulock. Chapter 7. Happy as a King. How far kings are happy, I cannot say. No more than could Prince Dolor, though he had once been a king himself. But he remembered nothing about it, and there was nobody to tell him, except his nurse, who had been forbidden upon pain of death to let him know anything about his dead parents, or the king his uncle, or indeed any part of his own history. Sometimes he speculated about himself, whether he had a father and mother, as other little boys had, what they had been like, and why he had never seen them. But knowing nothing about them, he did not miss them. Only once or twice, reading pretty stories about little children and their mothers, who helped them when they were in difficulty, and comforted them when they were sick. He, feeling ill and dull and lonely, wondered what had become of his mother, and why she never came to see him. Then, in his history lessons, of course he read about kings and princes, and the governments of different countries, and the events that happened there. And though he but faintly took in all of this, still, he did take it in a little, and worried his young brain about it, and perplexed his nurse with questions, to which she returned sharp and mysterious answers, which only set him thinking the more. He had plenty of time for thinking. After his last journey in the traveling cloak, the journey which had given him so much pain, his desire to see the world somehow faded away. He contented himself with reading his books, and looking out of the tower windows, and listening to his beloved little lark, which had come home with him that day and never left him again. True, it kept out of the way, and though his nurse sometimes dimly heard it and said, "What is that horrid noise outside?" she never got the faintest chance of making it into a lark pie. Prince Dolor had his pet all to himself, and though he seldom saw it, he knew it was near him, and he caught continually, at odd hours of the day, and even in the night, fragments of its delicious song. All during the winter, so far as there was any difference between summer and winter in Hopeless Tower, the little bird cheered and amused him. He scarcely needed anything more, not even his traveling cloak, which lay bundled up unnoticed in a corner, tied up in its innumerable knots. Nor did his godmother come near him. It seemed as if she had given these treasures and left him alone, to use them or lose them, apply them or misapply them, according to his own choice. That is all we can do with children when they grow into big children, old enough to distinguish between right and wrong, and too old to be forced to do either. Prince Dolor was now quite a big boy. Not tall. Alas, he never could be that, with his poor little shrunken legs, which were of no use, only an encumbrance. But he was stout and strong, with great sturdy shoulders and muscular arms, upon which he could swing himself about almost like a monkey. As if in compensation for his useless lower limbs, nature had given to these extra strength and activity. His face, too, was very handsome, thinner, firmer, more manly, but still the sweet face of his childhood, his mother's own face. How his mother would have liked to look upon him! Perhaps she did. Who knows? The boy was not a stupid boy, either. He could learn almost anything he chose, and he did choose, which was more than half the battle. He never gave up his lessons till he had learned them all, never thought it a punishment that he had to work at them, and that they cost him a great deal of trouble sometimes. "But," thought he, "men work, and it must be so grand to be a man, a prince, too, and I fancy princes work harder than anybody, except kings. The princes I read about generally turn into kings. I wonder." The boy was always wondering. "Nurse," and one day he startled her with a sudden question, "tell me, shall I ever be a king?" The woman stood, perplexed beyond expression. So long a time had passed by since her crime, if it were a crime, and her sentence, that she now seldom thought of either. Even her punishment, to be shut up for life in Hopeless Tower, she had gradually got used to. Used also to the little lame prince, her charge, whom at first she had hated, though she carefully did everything to keep him alive, since upon him her own life hung. But latterly she had ceased to hate him, and in a sort of way almost loved him, at least enough to be sorry for him, an innocent child, imprisoned here till he grew into an old man, and became a dull, worn-out creature like herself. Sometimes, watching him, she felt more sorry for him than even for herself, and then, seeing she looked a lot less miserable and ugly woman, he did not shrink from her as usual. He did not now. "Nurse, dear nurse," said he, "I don't mean to vex you, but tell me, what is a king? Shall I ever be one?" When she began to think less of herself and more of the child, the woman's courage increased. The idea came to her, what harm would it be, even if he did know his own history? Perhaps he ought to know it, for there had been various ups and downs, usurpations, revolutions, and restorations in No Man's Land, as in most other countries. Something might happen, who could tell? Changes might occur. Possibly a crown would even yet be set upon those pretty fair curls, which she began to think prettier than ever when she saw the imaginary coronet upon them. She sat down, considering whether her oath, never to say a word to Prince Dolor about himself, would be broken if she were to take a pencil and write what was to be told. A mere quibble, a mean, miserable quibble. But then she was a miserable woman, more to be pitied than scorned. After long doubt, and with great trepidation, she put her fingers to her lips, and taking the prince's slate, with the sponge tied to it, ready to rub out the writing in a moment, she wrote, "You are a king." Prince Dolor started. His face grew pale, and then flushed all over. He held himself erect. Lame as he was, anybody could see he was born to be a king. "Hush," said the nurse, as he was beginning to speak. And then, terribly frightened all the while, people who have done wrong are always frightened, she wrote down in a few hurried sentences his history, how his parents had died, his uncle had usurped his throne and sent him to end his days in this lonely tower. "I too," she added, bursting into tears, "unless, indeed, you could get out into the world and fight for your rights like a man, and fight for me also, my prince, that I may not die in this desolate place." "Poor old nurse," said the boy compassionately. For somehow, boy as he was, when he heard he was born to be a king, he felt like a man, like a king, who could afford to be tender because he was strong. He scarcely slept that night, and even though he heard his little lark singing in the sunrise, he barely listened to it. Things more serious and important had taken possession of his mind. "Suppose," thought he, "I were to do as she says, and go out into the world, no matter how it hurts me. The people of the world, active people as that boy I saw, they might only laugh at me, poor helpless creature that I am, but still I might show them I could do something. At any rate, I might go and see if there were anything for me to do. Godmother, help me!" It was so long since he had asked her help that he was hardly surprised when he got no answer. Only the little lark outside the window sang louder and louder, and the sun rose, flooding the room with light. Prince Dolor sprang out of bed and began dressing himself, which was hard work, for he was not used to it. He had always been accustomed to depend upon his nurse for everything. "But now I must learn to be independent," thought he. "Fancy a king being dressed like a baby." So he did the best he could, awkwardly but cheerily, and then he leaped to the corner where lay his traveling cloak, untied it as before, and watched it unrolling itself, which it did rapidly and with a hearty good will, as if quite tired of idleness. So was Prince Dolor, or felt as if he were. He jumped into the middle of it, said his charm, and was out through the skylight immediately. "Goodbye, pretty lark," he shouted as he passed it on the wing, still warbling its carol to the newly risen sun. "You have been my best pleasure, my delight. Now I must go and work. Sing to old nurse till I come back again. Perhaps she'll hear you. Perhaps she won't. But it will do her good all the same. Goodbye." But, as the cloak hung irresolute in the air, he suddenly remembered that he had not determined where to go. Indeed, he did not know, and there was nobody to tell him. "Godmother," he cried in much perplexity, "you know what I want. At least, I hope you do, for I hardly do myself. Take me where I ought to go. Show me whatever I ought to see. Never mind what I like to see." as a sudden idea came into his mind that he might see many painful and disagreeable things. But this journey was not for pleasure, as before. He was not a baby now, to do nothing but play. Big boys do not always play, nor men neither, they work. This much Prince Dolor knew, though very little more. As the cloak started off, traveling faster than he had ever known it to do, through skyland and cloudland, over freezing mountaintops and desolate stretches of forest, and smiling cultivated plains, and great lakes that seemed to him almost as shoreless as the sea, he was often rather frightened. But he crouched down, silent and quiet. What was the use of making a fuss? And wrapping himself up in his bearskin, waited for what was to happen. After some time, he heard a murmur in the distance, increasing more and more, till it grew like the hum of a gigantic hive of bees. And stretching his chin over the rim of his cloak, Prince Dolor saw, far, far below him, yet with his gold spectacles and silver ears on, he could distinctly hear and see. What? Most of us have some time or other visited a great metropolis, have wandered through its network of streets, lost ourselves in its crowds of people, looked up at its tall rows of houses, its grand public buildings, churches, and squares. Also, perhaps, we have peeped into its miserable little back alleys, where dirty children play in gutters all day and half the night. Even young boys go about picking pockets, with nobody to tell them that it is wrong except the policeman, and he simply takes them off to prison. And all this wretchedness is close behind the grandeur, like the two sides of the leaf of a book. An awful sight is a large city, seen from anywhere. But suppose you were to see it from the upper air, where, with your ears and eyes open, you could take in everything at once? What would it look like? How would you feel about it? I hardly know myself. Do you? Prince Dolor had need to be a king, that is, a boy with a kingly nature, to be able to stand such a sight without being utterly overcome. But he was very much bewildered as a blind person who was suddenly made to see. He gazed down on the city below him, and then put his hand over his eyes. I can't bear to look at it. It is so beautiful, so dreadful, and I don't understand it, not one bit. There is nobody to tell me about it. I wish I had somebody to speak to.
Do you? Then pray, speak to me. I was always considered good at conversation.
The voice that squeaked out this reply was an excellent imitation of the human one, though it came only from a bird. No lark this time, however, but a great black-and-white creature that flew into the cloak and began walking round and round on the edge of it with a dignified stride, one foot before the other, like any unfeathered biped you could name.
"I haven't the honor of your acquaintance, sir," said the boy politely.
"Ma'am, if you please. I am a mother bird, and my name is Mag, and I shall be happy to tell you everything you want to know, for I know a great deal, and I enjoy talking. My family is of great antiquity. We have built in this palace for hundreds, that is to say, dozens of years. I am intimately acquainted with the king, the queen, and the little princes and princesses, also the maids of honor, and all the inhabitants of the city. I talk a good deal, but I always talk sense, and I dare say I should be exceedingly useful to a poor little ignorant boy like you."
"I am a prince," said the other gently.
"All right, and I am a magpie. You will find me a most respectable bird."
"I have no doubt of it," was the polite answer, though he thought in his own mind that Mag must have a very good opinion of herself. But she was a lady and a stranger, so of course he was civil to her. She settled herself at his elbow and began to chatter away, pointing out with one skinny claw, while she balanced herself on the other, every object of interest, evidently believing, as no doubt all its inhabitants did, that there was no capital in the world like the great metropolis of No Man's Land. "I have not seen it, and therefore cannot describe it, so we will just take it upon trust, and suppose it to be, like every other fine city, the finest city that was ever built. Mag said so, and of course she knew." Nevertheless, there were a few things in it which surprised Prince Dolor, and as he had said,
he could not understand them at all. One half the people seemed so happy and busy, hurrying up and down the streets, or driving lazily along the parks in their grand carriages, while the other half were so wretched and miserable. "Can't the world be made a little more level? I would try to do it if I were a king."
"But you're not the king, only a little goose of a boy," returned the magpie loftily. "And I'm here not to explain things, only to show them. Shall I show you the royal palace?"
It was a very magnificent palace. It had terraces and gardens, battlements and towers. It extended over acres of ground, and had in it rooms enough to accommodate half the city. Its windows looked in all directions, but none of them had any particular view, except a small one, high up toward the roof, which looked out on the beautiful mountains. But since the queen died there, it had been closed, boarded up, indeed, the magpie said. It was so little and inconvenient that nobody cared to live in it. Besides, the lower apartments, which had no view, were magnificent, worthy of being inhabited by the king. "I should like to see the king," said Prince Dolor. End of chapter 7.